Giordino stared aghast at the brightly lit vessel bearing down on him. It looked like no ocean-going yacht he'd ever seen. It was shaped like a great green and white manta, or devil ray, with its cephalic forward fins encircling its huge plankton-gathering mouth. A wide sloping deck on the bow swept up and around a large arched picture window, and then past a circular wheelhouse. Giordino gazed in awe as the underhull of the main superstructure moved overhead slowly until the submersible was directly between twin catamaran hulls. Almost on reflex, he grabbed a chrome ladder built like a small staircase that abruptly appeared less than 2 feet away. Only then did he think to bend down and report to Pitt and Misty. "It's a catamaran. We're directly under his stern." Then he disappeared. For a few moments, they stood alone on the deck of the catamaran. The boat moved forward as the helmsman steered the vessel clear of the submersible. After traveling 200 yards, the boat slowed and drifted. They watched as a figure stepped down from the wheelhouse. He was a large man, the same height as Pitt, but 15 pounds heavier. He was also 30 years older. His gray hair and beard gave him the appearance of an old waterfront wharf rat. His blue-green eyes had a glint to them, and he readily smiled as he examined his catch. "Three of you," he said in amazement. "I thought there was only one in that little life raft."
"Not a life raft," Pitt said. "A deep-ocean submersible." He studied the old man.
"We've met before."
"Yes, I suspect we have."
"My name is Dirk Pitt," he introduced the others. The old man warmly shook hands with all. Then he turned and grinned at Pitt.
"I'm Clive Cussler."
Pitt looked at the old man curiously.
"You get around."
"I'm on a round-the-world cruise," Cussler said.
"I'm bound for Papeete, Tahiti, but I guess I'd better make a detour and set you folks on the nearest island with an airport."
"And where would that be?" asked Giordino.
"Rarotonga."
Pitt looked around the luxurious catamaran. "I see no crew."
"I'm sailing alone," answered Cussler.
"On a motor yacht this large?"
Cussler smiled. "The Periwinkle isn't your average yacht. Between her automated systems and computers, she can sail herself, and usually does."
Cussler led the way up a stairway to the wheelhouse. None of the Numa people had ever seen anything like it. The tinted windows ran in a 360-degree circle, providing vision on every horizon. There were no conventional instruments or gauges, no wheel for a helm or throttle levers. A large, overstuffed executive chair sat in front of 7 LCD liquid crystal display screens. The chair's right arm held a computer trackball, while the left armrest was fitted with a joystick. The screens were all encased in burled walnut cabinets. Cussler motioned for Pitt to sit in the helm chair.
"The Global Star phone is mounted in the panel to your right. Just press the blue button and you can all speak to your party on the other end."
Pitt thanked him and dialed up Sandecker's private line at Numa headquarters. The Admiral answered on the first ring.
"Admiral, this is Dirk."
Pitt could hear the Admiral's sigh of pleasure when he was assured that they were all alive and well.
"I've got Rudy here in my office," he said. "I'll switch to the speaker."
Then he told them,
"We can't be absolutely certain, but it's beginning to look like the Deep Encounter was hijacked."
"But why?" questioned Giordino. "What earthly good is an oceanographic survey ship to pirates? Where's the motive?"
"Motive."
Pitt let the words slide off his tongue and hang in the air. "The same people who torched the cruise ship and then sank her wanted to prevent us from discovering evidence of arson." Misty's eyes suddenly looked stricken. "Which brings us to the horrible possibility that everyone on the Deep Encounter has been killed." There was silence on the yacht and 10,000 miles away in Washington. They were all loath to consider the prospect.
"Rudy," Pitt said, "the pirates could have just as easily sunk the Deep Encounter after they captured it, but you say they faked voice transmissions of Birch.
Why would they have bothered to stall off any suspicion if the ship was already sunk? My guess, my fervent hope, is that they took the ship and everyone on board and hid them as bargaining chips should their plans go wrong.
If what Dirk suggests is accurate, said Misty, distressed, we only have a little time to save our friends.
I'll bet I know how to find both ships, said Pitt. We'll expand our search grid.
Sandecker's voice was skeptical. We increased the range and path of the satellite cameras, but there was still no sign of deep encounter.
Pitt played his wild card. True, but you were looking on the water.
Where were we supposed to look? Asked Sandecker, becoming intrigued. Dirk has a point, said Gunn thoughtfully. We didn't consider focusing the cameras on land.
Forgive me for asking, Giordino spoke up, but what land? The nearest landmass from where the cruise liner sank is the northern tip of New Zealand.
No, said Pitt, quietly for effect. There are the Kermadec Islands, no more than 200 nautical miles to the south, an easy 8-hour sail at a speed of 25 knots. He turned and looked at Cussler. Are you familiar with the Kermadec Islands?
I've cruised around them, answered Cussler. Not much to look at. Raoul Island is the largest, but it's only a pile of rock 13 miles square with lava rock cliffs. There's a small meteorological and communication station there, but it's automated. Scientists only visit it every 6 months to check and repair the equipment.
Is there a harbor large enough to anchor a small ship?
More like a lagoon, replied Cussler. But it's a safe anchorage for two, maybe three small ships.
Is there any possibility you could make a detour by the Kermadecs? Pitt asked.